The Army Corps of Engineers has delayed a decision to allow the builders of the Dakota Access Pipeline to tunnel under the Missouri River, pending more discussions with the Standing Rock Sioux Nation. But the companies behind DAPL immediately went back to court, claiming the delay was based on politics. They may be looking to the incoming Trump administration for a more sympathetic regulatory environment. Thousands of Native Americans and supporters have squared off for months against the builders, led by Energy Transfer Partners, over the $4 billion oil pipeline. Work is nearly complete, but the Native Americans say the risk to their sacred sites and to the water supply for the Sioux and 17 million other Americans is too great to allow the pipeline to cross the river. Reporter Sandy Tolan has been following this standoff in North Dakota and has our story.
It started on horseback early last April on the Standing Rock Sioux Reservation. 400 Native American riders headed north through the snow toward the banks of the Cannonball River. There, a few people set up teepees, foraged for firewood, built campfires, and prayed for allies in their fight against the Black Snake, the massive 500,000-barrel-a-day oil pipeline. Within weeks, Native people began arriving from across the United States and Canada. Supporters came too, environmentalists, racial justice activists, pro bono lawyers, medics, volunteers. By August, some 6,000 people had planted tents and teepees along the Cannonball. Today, the flags of 300 tribal nations flap in the wind along the long dirt track called Crazy Horse Avenue. Some call it the largest gathering of tribes in North American history. It's the first time the Great Sioux Nation has banded together against a common foe since the defeat of General George Custer in the 1876 Battle of Little Bighorn.
This was prophesized by our people that we were going to wake up.
Phyllis Bald Eagle came from the nearby Cheyenne River Reservation.
Seventh generation prophecy is my children. And when my son made that commitment, I knew then that the prophecy has come true. The seventh generation is going to wake up the sleeping giant.
The sleeping giant is Native solidarity. At Little Bighorn, members of the Crow Nation were scouts for General Custer. Today, Phyllis Bald Eagle says, they've come to join the fight.
When that happened, when the Crow Nation came down, it almost like the tension that had always been there between our nation and their nation had disappeared when they came. I was here when they came. Everybody was crying. Yes, because it's never happened before.
Emboldened by their common cause to defend the land and water, Bald Eagle and fellow pipeline opponents set up their teepees on lands granted the Great Sioux Nation in an 1851 treaty. With the coming of the railroads and new waves of white settlers, the treaty was later abrogated. Now the Fortune 500 company Energy Transfer holds the title to this land, which lies directly in the path of its pipeline.
Just leave these two in there.
Okay.
As we spoke in late October, a few people unloaded teepee poles from the back of a Penske truck. Bald Eagle's husband, Black Horse, raised his teepee exactly where the company planned to lay its pipe. They call it their treaty camp.
We're using those rights. We're exercising those treaty rights. We're going to stay here and stop the pipeline.
The only weapon that we got is prayer. That's why there's a lot of praying people from other nations. You know, white, red, yellow, black. They're all here. But we, as the Lakota people, know that this is our land, and we can and will win.
But supporters of the Dakota Access Pipeline are just as determined.
And this particular project, no matter what, needs to go forward.
That's North Dakota's Republican Governor Jack Dalrymple. His campaign war chest has been largely filled by oil industry contributions. A few years ago, North Dakota was all in on fracking before oil prices plummeted and the industry went bust. But now, Dalrymple says nothing is going to stop the Dakota Access Pipeline.
As far as this particular pipe is concerned, this has already gone through the process. It's done. It's finished. It has, according to federal judges, all of the proper documentation.
And the pipeline company is under serious pressure to get the oil flowing soon or risk losing its lucrative contracts with oil companies. Under glaring floodlights, work crews labor late into the night, laying pipe until they arrive near the edge of State Highway 1806 and the treaty camp where Bald Eagle and Black Horse have set up their teepees.
As hundreds have joined in the protest in solidarity with the Sioux tribe, camping out along the highways and disrupting construction.
Energy Transfer called for an end to the lawless behavior, saying the protesters should be evicted and prosecuted. That same day, an armed force of state and county police and the National Guard began forming behind a ridge just north of the treaty camp, shutting down the highway. The next morning, just before dawn, a lone pipeline opponent sat in the cab of his pickup truck.
So I'm posted up here north of the blockade. Just watching.
Mikasik Camp Horanek wore a backwards baseball cap and a no pipeline t-shirt. His eyes were fixed on the glow of the police barricade. 2 miles north.
From where I'm sitting here, I can see the floodlights where the military camp is set up at.
He's parked in the middle of the darkened highway, looking toward Fort Rice. From there, 140 years ago, the cavalry dispatched troops to join General Custer at Little Bighorn. Mikasik's a member of the Ponca Nation from Oklahoma. His uncle was a founder of the American Indian Movement and took part in the siege at Wounded Knee. His mother is a respected Native rights activist. And Mikasik, like others who've come here, calls himself a water protector.
We lived along the Missouri River for thousands of years. This river sustained our life and sustained the life of my people. And I owe it to this water to protect it. I do environmental work, fighting the fracking industry, fighting pollution. Environmental racism. My reservation has the highest cancer rate in the state of Oklahoma. You know, we're the pipeline crossroads of the world as well as the earthquake capital of the world. Where I live, it's an everyday fact that our people are dying from the environment around us.
Dawn breaks, and we can see a few police vehicles pull up in the middle of the shutdown highway. Sheriff Paul Laney leads a group of uniformed officers toward Mikasik, who gets out of his truck. Tensions rise quickly.
If you guys, I'm not done.
If that happens,
I'm not done.
Okay,
I'm not
I'll let
done.
You speak.
The police engage Mikasik and a couple of other protesters.
I'm here to uphold traditional law. I'm here to uphold treaty law, which is supreme law of this land.
You really believe that?
Yeah.
So you should just be able to go take anybody's house you want because you feel it's yours.
No, I should be able to take back land that the United States government broke the treaty. We didn't break the treaties. Okay. Our people didn't break the treaties. The government broke the treaties.
We have to enforce private property laws.
Okay, well, you're gonna have to because we're not moving.
You will be arrested if you're on private land. We're here telling you. It is a private property and you have to leave. Mikasik, we don't want a confrontation.
I understand that, but
listen.
Please
stand your people down and go back to the main camp and let's
talk. Highway 1806 is now a no surrender line and that camp is no retreat.
And that's your final word?
That's the final word.
Nope. Take care, gentlemen.
The officers walk back to their vehicles, and a sense of tense anticipation settles over the treaty camp. The next morning, October 27th, the police return with hundreds of reinforcements. I'm looking at a line of about at least 100 officers dressed in black and National Guardsmen dressed in camouflage and then county officers dressed in khaki forming three flanks on either side of military style vehicles including a mine resistant vehicle that has been designed for use against IEDs in Iraq and is being deployed here against very raucous, but so far unarmed, peaceful resistors. The military line advances slowly, firing pepper spray. On the protesters' side, someone douses a barricade of loose tires with kerosene and sets it ablaze.
America's built on stolen land!
A thick column of black smoke rises over the highway. The militarized force of hundreds advances. Rubber bullets knock one young man off his horse. The horse is hit too, and has to be euthanized. Police fire beanbag rounds and tasers. In the midst of the chaos is a slight, elderly Lakota woman in a red t-shirt, sitting on a stump, watching. Her name is Helen Redfeather, a grandmother from Wounded Knee.
History repeats itself, but you know what? Right now is right now. We can't let that pipeline through. I'm here to kill that snake. Come on, people, wake up. Wake up, people.
Moments later, Helen Redfeather rises and walks to the front line to confront the police, who arrest her and then 140 other people, including Mikasi and a group of elders praying beside their teepee. They're all cuffed and taken to jail. Many are charged with felonies. The next day, Mikasi told me what happened.
We were given numbers with permanent magic markers. We were marked with a number on our arm and then put on buses and taken to an underground parking lot. And when we got off the bus, we saw dog kennels there. And they put us in chain link fence, dog kennels on bare concrete floors, no bedding. The floors were really dirty and cold. The men and women were put into these kennels at about 20 people per kennel.
As he spoke, the authorities were dismantling tents, teepees, and a sweat lodge in the treaty camp, forcing Bald Eagle and others back into the main camp and clearing the land for the Dakota Access Pipeline. Drone footage taken a few days later by pipeline opponents showed crews laying pipe all the way to the Missouri River. But the pipeline opponents are not deterred. Soon, new clashes took place as the water protectors waded across a shallow tributary of the Cannonball River. They said they wanted to pray on sacred lands near the pipeline, but more clouds of pepper spray drove them back. Despite losing the treaty camp, again and again, the protesters pushed back against the pipeline company and the state militia protecting it. Mikasi Camp Horonic.
It's never over, and we're never defeated, and we're never conquered. We're going to always keep our faith, and we're going to continue to fight against this pipeline. When our backs are against the river, we'll still be standing there to protect that water and to protect that river.
The story of the fight at Standing Rock is being kept alive mostly by social media, aided in part by appearances from Jesse Jackson, actors Shailene Woodley and Mark Ruffalo, and the musician Neil Young. For a while, the camp dwindled to about 1,200, but now, as word of the protests and the militarized response spreads, the numbers are up again, by several reports, closer to 5,000 as winter approaches.
Okay, next thing, you guys, everybody on a pole. We have to...
Here in the northern plains, it can reach 30 below zero, yet several hundred of the water protectors are planning to stay here on the land.
One going to the left side of that pole, one going to the right. After you get that...
Lakota organizer Johnny Asseron leans over a large military tent, leading a crew that is trying to help everyone get prepared.
And when that snow and sleet comes, they're going to need a place to get into, you know? There's a lot of people not prepared, living in summer stuff, so we just want to make sure they get a place to go.
Opponents, meanwhile, are pushing the Obama administration to deny the pipeline company the right to drill under the Missouri River. They received good news on November 14th when the Army Corps of Engineers called for more study and tribal input on the river crossing. Energy Transfer pushed back, suing in federal court to complete the project. Its billionaire CEO, Kelsey Warren, blasted what he called a sham process and said his company has done nothing but play by the rules. Pipeline foes say they'll remain vigilant, despite the fact that President-elect Donald Trump is a backer of big oil and an investor in the Dakota Access Project. Opponents say they'll stop the black snake one way or another. This is Linda Black Elk.
The oil companies will not stop until they have literally squeezed every last drop of blood that they can out of our mother. And we've stood and sat idle for way too long. It's already gone way too far.
Black Elk is an ethnobotanist who teaches at Sitting Bull College on the Standing Rock Reservation.
I get goosebumps just thinking about it because it's really incredible to be able to say that you were there, that you were there at the time when everyone came together to stand up and say, you know, we're not going to let this keep happening. And people from all over the world, you know, who have and kind of looked out of the corner of their eye and then looked away in shame, they're not looking away anymore. They're looking at head on, and they're coming to stand with us.
for Living on Earth, I'm Sandy Tolan along the banks of the Cannonball River, North Dakota.